Yeah, makes no sense at all. So it is Wednesday, and we're kicking this around the last couple of days. And, you know, there's been a little something missing from the show, at least for me, since Bergman and Boss Amanda got their hands on us, John. What do you think?
Yeah, and so the one thing that they made us do that we didn't really want to do, but we thought, well, they're running this thing, we should let them do it.
Yep.
We've now convinced them to reverse.
Yes.
Now, very rarely when you argue with your boss do you win, but we have won. This is a major notable victory for anyone who has a dispute at work.
And coming back on March the 11th, that's your first day back, right, John?
Right. It's Friday, I think.
Coming up on March the 11th at 1:55. Hit it, Jorge. There you go. Fast Track is making a return to Mason in Ireland. I think it was Bergman more than anybody that killed it. Don't you think it was Bergman?
Yeah. And we're going to go back to doing it every day, and we're going to go back to doing it how we did it before. We both missed doing it. We could throw anything we wanted to in there. And so for those of you who liked Fast Track, it's coming back. For those of you who never heard it, it was a staple of our show for many, many years. One of the highest rated segments we've ever done. And so we're going to bring it back. And now that the pandemic is turning, Mace, it's time to bring Fast Track back full force.
That's a lot
exactly.
of work. Why do you guys want to do that?
But because, Michael, it's fun.
That's a lot of
Michael,
work.
Michael, don't you realize that Fast Track is the exact same thing as The Scoop, but they just play different music?
Oh, it,
no,
stop saying
Lindsay,
that.
Why would you do that?
Weird stiff in there.
No, The Scoop is a lot quicker because both of you guys have to do a ton of research for Fast
Track.
Well,
exactly. Fast Track does need to be quicker. Amanda said that if it's coming back, they got to play by her rules.
Oh, jeez.
No, you guys did a great job the last time. That's why I refused to sit in for one of you guys because Fast Track's too much work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, how do you guys find all that stuff?
I like doing it. I know, you got to look hard, but
yeah. Got to look hard every day.
We'll find it. It'll be good.
All right, so that is coming back starting on March the 11th. When John comes back from break, Fast Track makes its return. All right, so we were just talking about this. My brother, Brian, who lives down in Fort Lauderdale, is a poker player. And we welcome to the show right now, Brian Mashonsky. How are you? How's it going?
Doing great. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, Brian, we're doing good. So the question I had for Steve when he explained to me that you're playing a lot of poker. I love playing. I'm like you. I love playing poker. I could play every day.
Yep.
My question for you, Brian, would be, and this is just your personal feeling. I always worried when I lost a big hand, when I did what I thought was right, that I played it and I had a bad beat, which happens in poker.
Yep.
I always wondered, is there something unethical going on at the table? Is the dealer in cahoots with the guy I lost to, or maybe two or three players working again? It's that old line, Brian, if you look around a poker table and you don't know who the sucker is, it's you. I always thought maybe I'm the sucker. Does that ever enter into your mind when you do this?
Not if you play live, but if you play online, bad beats are very skeptical. But in a casino, where the cards are in a shuffler, there's eight-handed. It's impossible, to cheat. With the exception of, the.
What about two people at the table? Two people at the table signaling each other, saying a certain phrase.
I don't think you can signal. I think it's hard. You're not allowed to use your cell phone. They won't deal you into a hand with a cell phone. They'll shoo you off your phone. And today in South Florida, they have plexiglass up. You can barely see anybody. I don't think you could signal anybody if you wanted to with all the plexiglass, at the tables. So I never worry about that. But taking a bad beat happens. It's just part of the game. You take some and you give some. It's never cheating. I never worry about that.
So you left your job of many years a couple of months back, and now you play poker every day. Does that mean that you have become a professional poker player?
No, definitely not a professional poker player. I would not want to do that grind. I play you know, I play to win money, and I'm very profitable, but I would never want to do it for a living. Like, I'm going to eat no matter what. I see guys that, you know, play, and you can tell they're playing for a living, and, you know, their bankroll is, you know, running out, and they're struggling. I would not want to do that. So, no, I definitely do not play for a living, nor would I want to play for
a living. But you said you're profitable.
I do love to play.
And you're profitable.
I'm a profitable player, yeah. I keep very good records of every buy-in, every game that I play. You know, if I rebuy, and, you know, so I'm a profitable player. But I would not ever want to do it for a living. It is too big a grind, too much pressure.
Right.
I go for fun.
Yeah. Now, Brian, what, like, if you can control, sometimes I know you got to go to wherever the table has an opening, but what do you like to play? Like, what limits, what ante, if you have your choice, what's your game?
I would play pot limit Omaha. I would play 5-5 or 2-2. I would play 2-5 no limit. I would play 5-10 no limit.
Okay.
So I play, you know, not the highest stakes because they get pretty big down here. But in the middle for sure. You know, so usually they're $1,000 to $2,500 buy-ins.
Yeah. Steve, have you ever played Omaha?
No, never played Omaha.
It is super fun because, as Brian will tell you, there's a high winner and a low winner. So you get it, you can play, if you get dealt five lousy low cards,
you could still win
half the pot. And sometimes you can go both ways and win it all. But yeah, that's a great game, Brian.
It is a good game. There's a lot of variance in it. You have to be really disciplined. If you're not, you know, because everybody's betting the pot at some point. The pots just get so big. And, you know, you have to walk away sometimes from the second nuts because you know one of the other guys at the table has the nuts.
Right.
And you cannot win. So you've got to be super disciplined when you play, you know, pot limit Omaha. A little less disciplined on, you know, no limit, because you can win a ton of money in second nuts, third nuts.
Yeah, you can lose a ton.
In PLO.
My brother Brian Mishonsky is on the line, 710 ESPN. So what was, since we got here, what was the best thing about having me as a brother?
Oh, God.
Having you as a brother?
Yeah.
Let's see. You were extremely, just joking, clean. you know,
Brian, he's been wearing the same sweatshirt for 3 months.
Right. I will tell you the worst thing about being his brother. The worst thing was I was one grade behind him, and he was such a good student. He was so well behaved. So when I went into the next grade, every teacher said, "Oh my God, we get Steve Mishofsky's brother. This is going to be amazing." So I was a giant disappointment to every teacher. I was such a letdown because I was such an average student, and I was
in trouble a lot.
Terribly. I was not in trouble a lot, but, you know, I could, you know, mix it up.
So, Brian, if you were at a poker table with Steve, who's your older brother, and Travis, who's your younger brother, who is the easier mark?
I would say Travis would be the easier mark. Travis would be the easier mark, and I would play so aggressive against Steve. I would drive him insane.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done that. I've been at a table with you. I know exactly how that works. And your son, my nephew, Hunter, is exactly the same thing. He knows how to play aggressive, too.
Yeah, definitely play aggressive.
All right, well, listen, we'll let you get back to the office, which is your local casino. Thank you very much for coming on, Brian.
Thanks,
good talking
Brian.
To you.
Yep, anytime. Take care, guys.
See ya.
All right, there's Brian, who's one of the really nice, he's probably the nicest Mishonsky.
By the way, you would love Omaha. I'm surprised you've never played it.
Yeah, never played it.
That was the game we used to play all the time on the Laker plane. When there was a Laker plane.
Yeah, you know,
now we don't
now
we don't travel anymore. But that was the game of choice, and very fun.
All right, so listen, for all you Laker fans, we've got the ultimate game for your man cave. In celebration of the All-Star Game, which is this Sunday, we're giving away a Lakers edition Papa Shot arcade basketball game. Make sure to listen tomorrow and Friday for your chance to win your very own Lakers Edition Papa Shot arcade game. We will give away one each day. Visit papashot.net for more info, and we will tell you how we're going to give those away as soon as we decide how we're going to do it.
All right, Mace, let me drop this in real quick. The Lakers official injury report is out. All right, you ready?
Yep.
Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, and LeBron all out. All right. Alex Caruso, who has neck spasms, and Kyle Kuzma, who has a right heel contusion, are questionable. Jared Dudley, who has a right neck strain, and Damian Jones, who has a sore back, are probable. I'll tell you what, I would start Damian Jones. Have you seen him play
yet? Yeah, I thought he looked good.
He's on a 10-day contract. Let's see what that kid's got. Throw him out there. Let's go.
Yeah, he got quick points last night when he came into the game.
Yep, I don't think he's missed a shot as a Laker. I think he's 5 for 5.
All right, so don't forget Lakers basketball coming up for you a little bit later on. Lakers versus Sacramento. I'm sorry, Linz, go ahead.
I don't think she knew she was on the air.
That's okay. That's okay. Coming up next for you is Ned Coletti, our buddy Ned Coletti. We will check in on the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are officially playing exhibition games now over at Camelback Ranch. That's coming up next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so Ned Coletti is going to join us in a minute here. Dodgers officially playing exhibition baseball games now at Camelback Ranch, and one of the interesting dynamics is that there are fans there at those games. There are some. I don't know how many. I can't tell how many, but there are definitely some, which is encouraging. And remember, Stan Kasten a couple of weeks ago sent out an email blast to Dodgers season ticket holders saying he is hopeful that there will be some fans at Dodger Stadium for opening day, which is coming up on April the 14th. So things feel like they're moving in the right direction, John?
They are. Speaking of fans, here's Big T in San Gabriel on the phone who has a question about fans. Hey, Big T, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Big fan.
Thanks, man.
I have a question. What is the NBA going to be doing about Texas dropping the mandate as far as social distancing and masks when other teams are going to be coming in and visiting Texas and Texas teams are going to be going out to other states?
Right. I don't think, Big T, that because Texas has changed their restrictions, that the NBA is going to change theirs. For example, when I go to the Laker games, I was at a Laker game last night, I'm on a completely separate level than the players. I can't get anywhere near them. I'm on an orange level. They're on a red level. So let's say they let the fans in Texas, and they've let fans in about 8 arenas. And they let the coffee shops and the hotels and the stores and the bars and everything opens in Texas. The players are still restricted. They have rules that they have to follow. They can only go from their room to the bus to the arena, and they're quarantined off in the arena from other fans. And so I don't think because Texas has relaxed its restrictions that the NBA is going to relax theirs. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. But doesn't that still compromise them if they go to social areas like the traveling part?
They travel privately.
But what's interesting, John? Does that mean that the Mavericks and the Spurs can fill up their arenas now?
And the Rockets, yeah.
And the Rockets, they can actually fill them up?
I think that...
Because then aren't they getting close to players if you're in the lower bowl area?
Well, think about Mace, courtside Karen in Orlando with LeBron,
right,
or Miami.
She was down on the court
with LeBron.
Right.
Yeah, she was right there. I think that... and the Mavericks can still make restrictions if they want to. So let's say Mark Cuban opens his building.
I just saw Cuban says he's still going to stay at 25%.
Right. So, and he can require fans to wear masks and continue to do what they've been doing. So,
right.
It's a good question that Big T has, but I think that the player rules are going to remain in effect. That's my guess.
Yeah. I mean, we got kind of a hodgepodge of rules and regulations now, states and federal and local and county and
Right. You know, it's up to the way the governor of Texas is a guy named Greg Abbott. And the way he put it was, I'm going to leave it up to each individual proprietor as to how he wants to run his business.
Right.
And so they'll do it that way. All right. Speaking of business, our buddy Ned Colletti, who was the general manager of the Dodgers and has spent his career in baseball, is nice enough to join us now. Ned, how you holding up?
Hey, I'm doing okay. It's almost baseball time, yeah?
Yeah, we're almost there, man. Almost there.
Ned, we're going to bounce around a little, and I'm going to start with this one. I've told Mason before that I'm not against all these rule changes that baseball's brought in. I like the seven-inning doubleheaders. I like the runner on second base in extra innings. And the next one I would like to see, Ned, and I want you to tell me if it's just a bridge too far, I would like to see them outlaw illegal shifts. I would like to make the third baseman stay within a certain amount of space towards third base. And I think that when Max Muncy's up, I want him to have a chance, and I don't want to have every fielder over to the right side. Is that something that could ever happen, or is it too radical of an idea?
No, I think I would like to see it happen. I would like to see two infielders on both sides of second base.
Right.
And keep it that way. You know, with there being no rule, I thought, you know what, you've got to teach your hitters to go the other way. I can guarantee you they would never shift on Tony Gwynn. So, you know, but you're not going to, you know, are you going to be able to teach everybody to do that? Are people going to, you know, want that? I think in some ways it is fair for defense to play where it wants to, where it thinks it's best, and it's up to hitters to adjust. So I'm not sure that it'll ever happen. I think it's taken away from the game. I mean, you've got a lot more strikeouts, you've got a lot more ground ball outs because of shifts, and so you've got less, except for home runs, you've really got less activity offensively. Perhaps at some point in time, I think the players will have to have a strong voice for it to go back the other way.
You said less activity offensively. One of the things, and you know, I've been reading a lot about this, is that they are potentially going to do certain things to deaden the baseball this year, to sort of get out of that home run or strikeout paradigm that we've been living in for the last 6-7 years in the advent of launch angle and all that stuff. What do you think of the idea of deadening the baseball?
Well, it's, I've kind of lost track of where it used to be, you know, because people said, well, they juiced it. Now they're deadening it. I mean, what were we playing with 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago? You know, that's what I'd like to see. You know, I know people love home runs and things like that. It's, you know, I'm an older guy, right? A traditionalist. When you have a record like the home run record for the sport, if it's broken on September 30th and you're finishing up on October 1st, okay, I can handle that. When you have a record that is broken on Labor Day weekend for home runs, and you've still got 3 weeks to play, 30 teams have still got 18, 19 games to go, you know, something's totally different. You know, I think the pitching in the game is down. I don't think there's as much good pitching. I think the Dodgers really kind of feast on other teams. You can't throw a strike to the Dodgers, you're in a lot of trouble. And I think that it goes right in line with that. And I think I like to see the game back, the baseball back to where it was and make it more legit. But again, I don't know where it was. I mean,
whose desk
is like the formula that says this is where it was.
Ned, what I'm saying is right now it is basically home run or bust in a lot of guys at bats. And nobody in an era where the ball maybe doesn't fly as far, you may wind up with a few more triples. You may wind up with a few more doubles off the wall. You may wind up with more action on the base paths. You may be more focused on a guy going first to third than normally would because you're not staying put because you're expecting the next guy to hit a home run, right?
Yes. True. And it's, you know, so I don't know. I like strategy. I like, you know, there's few plays in baseball as exciting as a triple. But you see a lot of guys swinging for the fences. For a guy to hit 30 home runs after the steroid era, it was pretty good, pretty phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
How many guys a couple of years ago hit 30 home runs?
Yeah, tons.
Like if you weren't hitting 20, you were one of the lower level power hitters. I think that you have to go back to that. You know, I think the game, obviously, the, when you look at who hit 500 home runs, used to be a benchmark of greatness, of Hall of Fame status, and now you look at the group and there's a few names in there that you go, you know, it wasn't legit. And now as you juice the ball, you know, you're going to have more guys that will end up in these areas, providing that the ball wasn't juiced 80 years ago, 60
right.
years ago, 40
right.
years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, who knows?
You know?
That's good. But Ned Colletti is nice enough to join us. Ned, here's a conversation that's going on at spring training in every club in the league. It's, and I'll use Gavin Lux as an example. The Dodgers were told want to see Gavin Lux maybe earn that second base spot. They're going to give him a chance to go out there and show that he could be their everyday second baseman. You had to make these decisions for a lot of years. What is a fair sample size for that? In other words, do you if you let him play for a month, give him 30 games, is that enough? Do you got to leave him out there for 2-3 months? Can you do it in 2-3 weeks? What? And I'm just using Gavin as an example, but if you want to try out a guy and you want to see if he can be your everyday guy, what's a reasonable amount of time to give that player?
Well, I think it's different with everybody, and I think it's a process, and you have to take the individual, and you have to take their willingness to learn, their ability to change, their ability to take instruction, and then their ability not just to take instruction but to put it into use. And for some players, that may be 30 days. For some players, that may be a week. For some players, you may be wary of their ability to do it, just simply in a hitter's case, of their recognition of the strike zone and whether or not they can really work a count and understand what they can do if they try to pull everything, if they refuse to go the opposite way. I mean, these are all little things that you pick up along the way, and you may have seen all this a year ago, so you've already kind of started the process. You've seen in a young player, in a minor league player, and you see the process, and as you get to a point where that player is now going to have a chance to make your big league club, some of the things that you really liked, you got to make sure that you're still doing it. And some of the things that you thought were going to keep them from being a very good major league player, even a major league player, you've got to see adjustment to it. But there's no real set time to it. Team-wise, I would never do anything drastic until I got to May. I wanted to see the entire team play. That's a different kind of answer to the, right. the individual player. But I would need to see a team play for 25, 30 games to kind of settle in and see where the strengths and weaknesses are. One of the toughest things to do in sport, and especially in baseball, because you play it every day, in a decision-making role, is to have patience, especially with a young player. So you pick up your information little by little. And if you see somebody adjusting, you've got to give them the patience. If you see somebody stubborn and not willing to adjust, you're going to have to be less impatient because it's a result-oriented business, both on a team scale with the standings every day and also on an individual. So, but you take all these things into consideration and you know. And you also have to keep one other thing in mind. There's some people that in a challenge to play at the highest level, if they fail at it, they may be done. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but there's a few guys that you kind of know going in, you know what, we've got to give this person a really legitimate chance and every opportunity to succeed. I think Dave Roberts does a great job at that. And years ago, Whitey Herzog in St. Louis did a great job of putting players almost always in a position to succeed. Many teams don't have that luxury to have the depth to be able to do that. But you have to keep that in mind. There's some players that the more they the more that is thrown at them and the tougher time that they have, the better they get. We always put Cody Bellinger up a level. If you look at his age and where he played when he played it, we always put him up a level because it would take him about a month or so to struggle, but we knew that he was game for the challenge and that he would fight his way through it and become a better player because of the competition. I had another player that kept thinking that we were slow playing him and keeping him in low A and high A because he just wasn't performing. And so I told player development, hey, put him in double A. The league will tell him how good he is. And that was a different dynamic, you know. So
right.
You have to keep that in mind, too, the psychology of the athlete or anybody for that matter.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ned, quick conversation here. We appreciate it. We want to talk to you again soon as we get deeper into spring training. Got to feel pretty good about this. This pitching staff looks unreal, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a tremendous team. It really is, and something to never be taken for granted.
All right. Hey, thanks, Ned. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Be well.
All right, there's Ned Coletti, former Dodgers general manager. By the way, it feels like Gavin Lux has been around forever. He's only had 138 major league at-bats.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he's 25 yet.
Yeah. No, yeah. He's still a kid and has barely had a sample size. Although I heard somebody say, I think it was Jorge Castillo from the LA Times, say he thought he might start in the minor leagues this year. So we'll wait and see. It sounds like it's Corey not Corey Seager. I always do this. Chris Taylor's job to lose at the moment. All right, 877-710-ESPN. You want to jump in here with anything, do it. If you happen to get through the difficult screening process, you get a Mason and Ireland T-shirt. Also coming up next for you, what Frank Vogel feels good about and not so good about moving into the All-Star break. He talked about this last night. Lakers lose to Phoenix last night. They're in Sacramento to take on the Kings tonight with a shorthanded roster. All that's coming up for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Never touch the button.
Never touch it. This
what
portion
are you
thinking of show
about
brought
touching
to you,
that button?
Brought to you by our friends at Puente Hills Toyota. Find out why Puente Hills Toyota is the house of yes.
Hey, Alex is on line 3 and has been on hold for a while, wants to talk Lakers. Hey, Alex, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, man? Just want to talk about the Lakers.
Yes.
Yeah, go, man. What do you got?
I want THT to get some more minutes, man. I feel like he's a really good player. I just want him to get comfortable with the team, you know. I want him to show off his skills. I've seen, like, you've seen a little bit of what he can do, but I just want him to get more time in there so he can – really shows what he can do.
Well, Alex, tonight might be your night because you used the phrase earlier, it may be out of necessity.
Yeah.
There's no Anthony Davis. There's no LeBron. There's no Marc Gasol. And maybe Kyle Kuzma, Alex Caruso, both out as well. I think, Mace, his career high in minutes is 34. I think he could break that tonight. His career high in points is 17. I think he could break that too. But I think tonight may be the night for Talen Horton-Tucker. He might even start.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on what report Frank. And by the way, if Kuz doesn't play, they need him to shoot just because they need the offense.
Right.
They just don't have a lot of offensive firepower. If there's no LeBron, no AD, no Kuz, I think Talen Horton-Tucker would be given the ultimate green light, more than he's ever had before.
Yeah, and LeBron is, in case you didn't mention it there, LeBron is sitting out tonight. He did not take the flight to Sacramento. That means he's got one game in the next 7 days, which is the All-Star game on Sunday, which is good. Give him an opportunity to rest for the second
the next
half.
9 days. They don't
is
play,
it 9 days?
Well, think about it. They don't play after tonight. They don't play a real game until a week from Friday, the 11th. And so he would have from – and since he's not playing tonight, he didn't even go on the trip. LeBron's
so
in L.A.
So 4th through the 11th, right?
Yeah.
3rd
so
through the 11th.
Really the 2nd through the 11th. The last
right.
game he played was last night.
Good.
So he's going to get you know, a good 9 days off here.
After the game last night, here's Frank Vogel, what he's happy about and not happy about going into the All-Star break.
I'm happy with how we're competing. You know, our guys are giving great effort and great hustle and great fight. I'm proud of them. We're staying together. You know, we're understanding there's a big picture here. You know, guys are, you know, keeping a big picture mindset. But certainly our execution, you know, coach is always going to want to be better with our execution. And, you know, I would say that applies to where I'm at with our team right now.
And here he is on how difficult it is managing the roster with injuries.
Yeah, one guy goes out and, you know, you have to make a decision as to, you know, how to fill that spot, whether it's a next man up or whether you're going to, you know, slide guys around a little bit, you know, maybe keep Trez in the backup rotation that he's used to versus starting. And then it's not just tonight. You know, you have tonight's matchup that you go through. And how does it impact tonight's matchup? you know, next game may be something different. But, you know, when you have a guy that could be out for some time, you know, you got to make a short-term decision and a potential long-term decision if a guy could be out a week or so. You know, so you just go through your process. You meet with your staff. You make a group decision. And you go out and compete to win games.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I just heard?
What?
When he mentioned keeping Montrez. Is Michael back there? We should get Michael
in. Yeah,
Montrez
got the start last night against Phoenix.
I think Damian Jones could start tonight, Mike, if his back holds up. Why not? He's on a 10-day. Exactly. You got to find out if he can play, right?
Perfect time, perfect opportunity to experiment and see just what he's got. Give him 25 to 30 minutes a night.
You know a little bit more about him than other people do because he played with Clay at Golden State. You like him?
Yeah, he's shown you a sample size of what he can do when given the opportunity. He's a JaVale McGee type. Just throw the ball up by the square. He'll go get it and dunk it. He'll block and challenge shots. He'll run the floor like a sprinter. No Lopo skills, but he's a typical big man in the game today. Pick and roll, throw the ball up and let him dunk it like a poor man's version of DeAndre Jordan. But, yeah, give him a shot. He could do that.
So, Michael, last week, and Ireland was all over me for this, but I think you after that Utah game, I was really upset. Mm-hmm. I was like, where's the fight? Where's the spirit? Where's the energy? Where's the defensive intensity? Last night wasn't about that. Oh. I thought they played really hard.
Sure.
And, you know, I have no criticism of that. You can't take anything away from last night's loss because they were so shorthanded.
Yeah, of course.
Is tonight they're facing a really bad Sacramento team.
Yeah.
They've lost 11 out of 12. And I heard you talking to Spock about this yesterday on the Spock and Jack pregame.
Very logical, very logical talk.
Very, very logical. On the fact that Sacramento, the Vlade Divac, actually passed on Luka Doncic.
Whew.
Which is not just talk about a franchise changer. Uh-huh. It changes the course of history in the league,
sure
right?
Did. Yep.
How does a mistake like that get made?
I don't know, because Vlade, if anyone should know about European basketball, is Vlade Divac, one of the icons of European basketball, one of the more respected people and most knowledgeable people about European basketball and how tough the Spanish league is. And for a 16-year-old kid to go over there and compete with grown men in their 30s and be able to hold his own and then get better every year, I don't understand how Vlade Divac overlooked that. And knowing with his roots and his information and his contacts in the EuroLeague, that's got to be one of the top five biggest draft mistakes in the history of this league, because Vlade should have known better, being Mr. Europe that he is or was.
And like Michael, even Phoenix, like we saw DeAndre Ayton last night, and you like DeAndre Ayton, he's a Bahamian like you.
But he's not Luka Doncic.
Yeah, even Phoenix missed this, didn't they?
Yeah, even Phoenix, and I love DeAndre. He's going to be an all-star. He's not a butt. I don't want to say a bust, but he's not going to be an average player like Marvin Bagley seems to be developing into. DeAndre's going to be a multiple-time All-Star because he can flat-out play. But you're right. If Phoenix could redo that draft, they would definitely bring in Luka. And imagine a backcourt with him and Devin Booker for the next decade. Oh,
crazy.
My goodness.
That would have been
crazy.
Unbelievable. Hey, Michael, I don't know if you were listening when Mason asked me about the Devin Booker ejection.
I heard you. I was driving up. I heard you.
Okay, so do you have anything to add? They can't throw him out like that, can they?
It's obviously the damage has been done, but they need to resend those technical fouls. But you're right, David Stern. Adam Silver's got to start talking to these refs and start understanding. Listen, people are now tuning into TV to watch Devin Booker play, okay? Unless he puts his hand on you or throws the ball at you, hits you in the face, you don't throw players like that out of the game. I don't understand it. So what if they cuss at you? So what if they have an attitude? Give them a tech, tell them to shut up, or even give them a warning before you tee them up the first time. If they continue it, then give them a tech, but keep these kind of stars in the game. How does it benefit a league to throw your stars or fire your stars out of the game that people tune in to see? I don't understand this.
I want to read you. This is actually, Jorge found this for us. Section 5 conduct in the NBA 2020-2021 rulebook. Technical foul shall be assessed for unsportsmanlike tactics such as disrespectfully addressing an official.
Oh, please. I heard it's ahead all the time.
Contacting an official, overt actions indicating resentment to a call or no call, use of profanity, a coach entering onto the court without permission of an official, a deliberately thrown elbow, blah, 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 taunting, cursing. It says the deliberate act of throwing the ball or any object at an official by a player shall be subject to ejection. So that is the little wrinkle in that thing. And I looked at it. He tosses him the basketball.
Right. Yeah.
It really, he literally, I mean, there may be a little extra mustard on it, but He tosses them the ball, official.
Exactly. You can tell when it's a really hostile act. You can be tell it's a frustrated act. You throw the ball over a little bit more spice on the ball to the referee. As long as he catches it, as long as he doesn't hit him in the face or something like that, what's the big deal? You know, you got to be able to be more lenient and emphasize in these doing these rules, these laws against these players so they keep them in the game. I don't understand it. This is ridiculous. You know, the game loses up when you throw these stars out, when you foul them out.
Well, but and Michael Mason asked me, is there nothing a player could say that wouldn't get you?
You know,
and I really, Michael, don't think he could say anything to get me to throw him out.
That's the thing about it, Ireland. Why are we still hung up on cursing?
When you curse,
Mace.
You're hung up on cursing.
But I accept that people use it in their everyday language and normal conversations, okay? I accept that, especially when they get angry. You hear it. You can't ignore it. You can't be naive and say people don't curse. You hear it everywhere you go, in the barbershop, in the hair salon. People swear. People use swear words. So if you're on a court, why can't you swear? What's the big deal? People sitting on the court side are probably swearing when they're having conversations.
Are there any limits, Michael?
Yes. I say you can't put your hands on an official.
No, I'm talking about language-wise.
Well, yeah, obviously racial stuff. You can't say stuff like
that. Yeah, right, racial stuff, sure.
I'm just talking about curse words.
Yeah,
if a guy says, what kind of...
By the way, Mace, I don't think there is, short of using the N-word or something,
yeah.
I don't think there is something you could say to me if you were a star player and I was a ref. You could call me every name in the book and I would look at you and I would say, Steve, we're going to keep playing. And if you don't be quiet, I'm going to tee you up and maybe throw you out. But shut up.
Mace,
let's play. I'm not throwing you out without talking to you first.
In the late 70s, early 80s, when I was a young player in the league, Mace, I used to hear veteran players say to the wrestler, that's a bleeped up call. What kind of bleeping call is that? And the ref would say, shut the bleep up. And that was it.
So I don't know. Does that still go on?
No. Are you kidding me? You can't even look at these officials now. They want to throw you out.
So if you drop the F-bomb to an official, you're getting teed up?
Oh, yeah. Immediately.
Right away.
Really?
Yeah.
Instead of the referee telling you to shut the bleep up like they told
us. Yeah, they got to lighten that up.
Yeah,
they got to lighten that up.
That's what
every
I'm talking
fan
about.
In the stands is dropping the F-bomb.
That's what I'm saying, Mace.
Play. Why shouldn't a player be able to do it?
Rally. I mean, even on the airways, people act like cursing doesn't exist. The FCC, come on, you hear it all the time. And I don't curse. But I don't advocate it, but it's part of life.
By the way,
part
the thing of I love about this.
But,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
Continuous,
in the rule book, continuous criticism or griping may be sufficient cause to assess a technical. That is what the game is now. It is nonstop
griping and
complaining about calls.
It's an entertainment product. And going back to Michael's original premise, you are sitting down to be entertained. Can you imagine if you went to a Broadway show or you went to a movie and your favorite actor or your favorite guy in the play let out a string of F-bombs and somebody came in from the side and said, you're out of the play. You're out of the movie.
Right.
You're out of the show. Or you go see a rock concert and Mick Jagger comes out and cusses and somebody says, you're out. You can't. That's the equivalent of what's going on here.
And I don't advocate for this.
I'm
not saying that it should be allowed in high school because they're kids. But in the pros, we're grown men. Let them talk to each other like they want to talk to each other. My goodness.
All right. Coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, here we go. It is Radio Tinder time. Linz, what do you got for us?
All right. According to Business Insider, Tinder, Bumble, and other dating apps and websites have seen a noticeable increase in the number of people throwing some variation of vaccine in their profile. That is the word. And it seems like users who've gotten it have a distinct advantage when it comes to attracting the interest of someone else looking for some in-person human interaction.
Huh.
In addition to anecdotal evidence that suggests it increases your chances of getting a match, a representative from OkCupid, which is a dating site, told the outlet, not only is the vaccine becoming the biggest talking point on dating apps, it's actually becoming a huge deal breaker, saying that 40% of its younger users would refuse to see someone who refuses to get one. So let's get a little hypothetical here. If you were still in the dating pool and you were on these dating apps, would you date somebody who refused to get the COVID vaccine? Swipe left or swipe right?
Well, what's interesting about your question is, it's really just an answer to a question because most young people can't get the vaccine yet, right? So you're asking me what my
Well, I think that's only in California because I know, I mean, I know a lot of people who've gotten it. I know that there's some states that they don't really have rules and restrictions on who gets it when. So I think it depends on where you live.
Could you get it in Ohio?
Yeah, I could. If I could get an appointment, I could.
Huh. Yeah. You know, we're all going to make our own decisions about this stuff. Like I hear people saying, you know, freedom, I don't want the vaccine. You know, if once the vaccine's available to everybody, whether you choose to get it or not is entirely up to you. I mean, I obviously got my first shot. It feels like the socially responsible thing to get your shot, but there's going to be some people that don't.
Well, you know what? Back to Lindsay's question though, Mace, if I would not date one of those people.
No, me either.
I think they're too stupid. I've yet to hear. I mean, and I've talked to several different doctors about this. I've yet to hear a good rationale for not taking the vaccine. Have you heard a good one?
No, absolutely not. It's just people and their odd views of things. I mean, if that's your position, I don't consider you to be dateable anyway. So
Lindsay, would you date somebody who refused to get the vaccine?
I don't think so, because I think at this point, anybody who's refusing to get the vaccine is, forgive me if I offend anybody by saying this, but like one of those like COVID troopers who's like, I don't need it either because they think they're like too healthy or because they think it's not necessary. And I think that, like you guys just said, if we all just want the world to go back to normal, get the damn vaccine and just shut up about it.
But this is, it's just like any other dating profile question. Like people, you know, this presidential election, the most recent one, was so divisive that if you had it in your profile that you supported either candidate, it probably eliminated half of the dating pool.
Sure.
Yeah. And you know what? That's probably a good thing, though. While I don't have my political stance, you know, broadcast anywhere on like a dating profile or anything, I think that it would probably, if somebody had like an egregious stance a certain way, I think that it would definitely be a deal breaker for me.
Yeah. If you don't got your vaccine, I'm probably not going to date you. I mean, it's just simple as that.
But Mason, California, if you were single, this is more a question of, would you be willing to get it? Cause I mean, you got lucky. You found a pharmacy that had extras.
Yes.
But most people under the age of 60
haven't had one yet.
Yeah. Haven't had access. You're talking philosophy.
Yeah, philosophy. But
I think over the next like couple months here, it'll all be equal.
Well, supposedly now enough vaccine in the country for everybody by May. I mean, this thing's going to turn fast. And ultimately, I think you'll only really want to run with the people who have the vaccine, right? You wouldn't want to get with somebody who doesn't have the vaccine if you've got it. That to me makes no sense. So, yeah, it's interesting that is a dating profile technique now. I can see why it would work. I see why it would have some appeal.
Lindsay, what's next?
All right. So with people returning to stadiums and arenas in many parts of the country, albeit in limited capacity, some of these staple in-game festivities are just never going to be the same. One example of that was when the Milwaukee Bucks tried to reinvent the Kiss Cam with the hand sanitizer cam on Tuesday night. And here's a little clip of what it sounded like.
Ask them, keep those hands clean. Then use your hand sanitizer. There you go. Yep, that's you. All right, most fans, our hands are nice and clean now. I think we're ready for our next phase cam. Let's go ahead and do the air five cam. Ready?
Yes, the hand sanitizer cam has a scoreboard squirting virtual hand sanitizer out of a bottle on a fan's hands.
So you just hold your hands up and pretend you're getting hand sanitizer squirted in your hands? Okay.
And then you also heard at the end, they pivoted to the Air 5 cam, where they want people
to give
Air 5. Oh,
where you do an air high five, yeah.
Yes. So while teams are trying to find new ways to adapt to the current times, do you guys think that the Kiss Cam is gone for good? Swipe left or swipe right?
Wow, that's a really
good question. Because you're only kissing someone that you're with already, someone that you is either your wife or your partner, your husband, whatever that is. So I don't know why you wouldn't continue to kiss your partner, right?
Yeah, I think the Kiss Cam could
maybe
still
it's more
work.
Of like a what's the word? Like an optics thing. Like maybe they don't want to encourage you know, closeness and kissing and stuff like that. You know,
we've all admitted that handshakes are dead and they're never coming back. So maybe the kiss cam is dead. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, times are going to – a lot of stuff is going to be different when we get out of this, when we all get out of this thing. But, yeah, the kiss cam the kiss cam, I think, probably is dead. I'm just going to say it. I think it's dead.
Probably.
I think it's dead.
All right, probably. I think that –
And, by the way, the hand sanitizer scoreboard feature, not going to work. That will not be catchy.
Yeah, I thought it looked kind of ridiculous because especially the one lady was just sitting there by herself, and there was just this squirt, 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 and she was just sitting there, and I was like, all right, everybody's not going to play along with this, and it's going to look really weird if they don't. All right, so last one here. Creighton coach Greg McDermott has apologized for urging his players to, quote, stay on the plantation in a post-game locker room talk following a loss to Cincinnati. In a Twitter statement yesterday, McDermott said that he used a, quote, terribly inappropriate analogy in making a point about staying together as a team despite the loss, end quote. McDermott, who's white, told his team, guys, we got to stick together. We need both feet in. I need everybody to stay on the plantation, end quote. Creighton assistant coach Terrence Rincher, who is black, tweeted that he was deeply hurt by McDermott, but said that the players want him to remain with the team. Many on social media suggested that McDermott should step down or at least temporarily step away from the team after his insensitive remark. Do you agree? Swipe left or swipe right?
That's a complicated conversation right there.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, this is Doug McDermott's dad.
You
know, who is the All-American, and he's been there forever. He's been there for a really long time. Symbolically, Mace, I would step away for a game.
Would you?
I would, if I was him. Just to show that you get the seriousness of the mistake. I think that whenever their next game is, when he shows up on the sidelines, that's all anybody's talking about. If he takes one game off, he's already apologized for it. I think he's a good guy. I think he's got a body of work. We just live in a time that is so volatile that I wouldn't even make the school suspend me for a game. I would say, look, guys, to show that I understand the gravity of the mistake I made and that I'll never do this again, I'm going to skip the next game and have my assistant coach the team, and I'll be back, you know, whenever the game after that is.
That is probably a smart way to handle it. You know, there are certain expressions that have racist origins that still get used. And I don't believe that this guy, this McDermott, was referencing all of the ugly history behind the idea of a plantation. But that expression has always existed long past issues of racial divide. But yeah, John, you're probably right. That's probably a good way for him to handle it.
And there are a lot of people that will say, absolutely not. He didn't do anything wrong. You're being too politically correct, blah, blah, blah. I think it's just a show of good faith to say, look, I get it. Most of my players are black. Some of my assistant coaches are black. I can't be making plantation references. I know better, and I'm gonna suspend myself for a game just to do it, and maybe even take your salary for that one game and donate it to charity. I would do something to get in front of it.
Yeah.
So you guys don't think in it at all that he should like step down completely?
I don't.
No, I do not. I do not.
Do you, Lindsay?
I didn't until I was listening to Keyshawn this morning on KJZ, and he made a point that you don't say something like that just to say it out of nowhere like you've never said it before, especially when you're talking to a team. You don't refer to something as a plantation unless that's something that, like, that's terminology that you've used in the past. So the fact that he said it then means that he's probably said it in the past, and that means he's probably thought it in the past. And because that's part of his vocabulary, I think that, you know, maybe he's not the right guy to be leading a team of young black basketball players.
Well, I would say, Lindsay, I don't think you're wrong, everything you just said, but I'll just tell you a quick story. The only time Kobe ever called me and asked to come on the show was when, Mace, you remember this a few years ago when he yelled at that one referee and he used the F word that is equivalent to a gay slur,
yeah,
the
gay
one that
slur.
Rhymes with maggot?
Yep.
And he said, he goes, you know what? I've used that word too much. I think it needs to be eliminated from not only my vocabulary, but everybody's vocabulary, and I want to come on and talk about it. And he came on and did 25 minutes with us, and he said, he gave no excuses. He just said, look, it's a word that's thrown around too casually. I'm guilty of it too. I'm going to eliminate it from my vocabulary, and I want to be upfront about this. Maybe McDermott goes that route.
Well, I understand, because like you said, it's a word that's thrown around casually. I don't think referring to a group of young kids and a team, a group of any kind, and saying we need to stay on the plantation, I don't think that's thrown around very casually. I don't think I've ever really heard that before.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it's a rough one. It's a rough one. That whole idea, stay on the plantation, basically don't run away. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear from people on that.
Oh, is Michael still there?
Yeah, I'll be on.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, Michael, let's do that coming up. I think we've actually got who do we got? Oh, yeah, we got coming up for you, Dan Wyke. But then let's circle back to that. I think that's really interesting. What do you do about that? Mesa and Ireland. Michael. Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN.